friends with someone and say we can drink from the same cup. But I won't put Andy through that. Very good to be here, and I'm very grateful. And it's very encouraging to us. Yes, thank you. Very encouraging to us to know of the friendship and the prayer support of so many people. It means a lot to a person when you're on a mission field and all around you everywhere is unsaved and hardness and opposition to the gospel, and the road seems uphill every day. Never get to the part where you're coming down coasting the other side. But it's a wonderful thing to know that people are praying for you. And before we talk about anything else, I just want to make sure that you all know that your prayers are very important to us. It's the next best thing to being there with us. And we do have a guest room, so if you want to come and visit, you can come and be with us too. But thank you so much for praying. My wife would have loved to have been here today, but she's unable to do so. She's my, after 50 years of marriage, we're in our 51st year now. She's still my best friend, and I'm still crazy over her. So she's a wonderful person and a very helpful, tireless co-laborer in the work of the Lord. So we're going to begin at Spain today, and this is the place we spoke of last night where the Lord called us to serve Him very clearly through a series of opportunities that were given to me by a man that I was learning under. He was the one who discipled me, or as they say today, your mentor, William MacDonald, and he was supposed to go to Spain, and he couldn't, and they said in the letter, someone, if you can't come, and recommend someone to come in your place. And he read that to me over lunch. We saw him all the time. Our children called him Uncle Bill, and he was just like a member of the family. So we were having lunch together in our home one day, and he read me this letter. And I said, so you're going to Spain this summer? And he said, well, I can't go. I have another obligation. But it says here to invite someone or to recommend someone to go in my place. And I said, oh, who are you going to recommend? And he just sat there looking at me. He said, you don't get it, do you? My wife caught on before I did. And so that was how we ended up knowing of Spain for the first time. And I was explaining last night that when I came back, we began to pray that if the Lord wanted us to go to Spain. I had seen a country full of needs everywhere and a whole province that had no evangelical witness at all, nothing. The only thing they had besides Catholicism was one, what do you call them, Kingdom Hall of the Jehovah's Witnesses in the whole province, nothing else. But of course you can't reach the people without the language. I learned that on that trip in 1983. It's so difficult. I had a Mexican fellow who was my translator, and so I spent, his name was Miguel, and I spent most of those weeks in that summer trip saying, Miguel, Miguel, help. Because anytime you want to talk to anybody, you have to go through Miguel. So I went home with two things. There's a great need here, and men who said, could you come back and teach us? And I said, could you come over to California and we'll teach you in the assembly there. You can learn English and come. And they said, no, we can't learn English. We're going to pray that you learn Spanish and come back here. I said, okay, you pray. Well, you can tell who won in that contest, who prevailed. And so my wife and I, very simply, I'm repeating a little bit of last night for some of you who weren't here, so you'll know how we came there. We prayed together. We didn't mention anything to anyone, not even to William MacDonald. And we just said, the two of us, if the Lord wants us to go to Spain, the first thing He's going to have to do is provide us a way to learn the language. And without going into all the details, we had no free time and no money to go study in a university, pay the tuition fees and all of that, nor time to do it, for that matter. A man in the assembly, after about several weeks I'd been back, called and said, weren't you in Spain this past summer? Would you be interested in learning Spanish? I said, well, yes, Jerry, I'm interested, but the question is how to go about it. He said, well, look, he said, I just found there's a man, an Argentinian man and his wife, who are going to open an evening school one night a week, Tuesday night, that was the only night we had free. And they're only charging $10 to buy the book. That's it. They're doing it as a ministry. And so that's what we did. 3 years, 2 hours, one night a week, studying Spanish with them, doing the homework, learning. And in the midst of that, there was a lot of prayer in the assembly and an opportunity to go and visit. My wife went with me, and we visited in Spain for a month and came back and continued to pray. We believe that if it's the Lord's will for you to do something, you won't be the only one who knows it. That when Paul and Barnabas went out in the beginning, the Lord communicated his call to them through the assembly. And the brethren prayed for them and supported them. And the word, the scripture says, sent them out. But the word really means they released them. It doesn't mean they sent them with authority. They released them. They let them go do what God had called them to do. Well, this is what happened with us. And so we ended up in Spain. We were 16 years in the north of Spain until 2002, and we moved down to this area, to Seville, where you can see I'm still in weather shock because we have orange trees on the streets there, and they're laden with oranges. These are the oranges you have in your marmalade. This is where they come from. And so this is the area of the world that the Lord has called us to. It's a very beautiful country. A lot of contrast in climate from the north to the south. One of the things about Spain is it's very Roman Catholic superficially. People keep up appearances. They don't, probably a lot of them probably don't believe anything. They're practicing atheists or agnostics. But if you bring up the subject of religion, they take refuge in the Catholic Church. I'm Catholic. And that's the end of that. Never read the Bible, don't know anything about it, have been taught by the Catholic Church in Spain that everything outside the church is a cult, and that people are just after your money, and that they'll take your children away from you, and all of these things. They're full of all of these ideas. And since the days of the Inquisition in Spain, the Spanish mentality back in those days was, in mass, the priest told the people how to recognize if your neighbor was a Jew or a Lutheran, is what they called Protestants. That was the person they associated them with, a Lutheran or, what was the other one? They say the Moros or the Moors or the Muslims, how to recognize them. If he changes and puts on a nice clean clothes and takes his wife out for a walk on a Saturday, invite him out over to your home and offer him pork and see if he'll eat it. And if he won't, he's probably a Jew. Then go and tell the priest. And this is the way they did. And they taught people to, we say, vivir de vidas ajenas. It means live in the lives of others, always looking at what other people are doing, watching them and spying on them and reporting on them and talking about them. And this took root in the Spanish culture to the place where today people live for they still have this, what they call the que dirá. What will people say of me? What do people think of me? What are the neighbors going to say? What are people going to think? And they're so worried about that even though they have a question, they might not ask it because they're afraid of what people see. That one woman would come to the meeting. She would walk down the other side of the street with a shopping bag like she was going shopping for something. And when she'd get across the street in front of the hall, she'd look around and make sure nobody saw her, and then she'd run across the street and come in. This is the way she came to the meeting, just so that people wouldn't see her. So this is the mentality. Unfortunately, Spain is still this way. The young people don't believe in anything, but they're Catholic because they were baptized Catholic, and they don't want to go against the grain of society. It's more of a social thing with them than anything else. But Spain is a very needy country. It's a little more open now than it was before, but we still face all of these things. So when you learn the language, that's one barrier you get over, but then when you get over that barrier, then you become aware of all the other barriers. The way people think, you learn to think like them and to understand what they're feeling about things. Well, this is where we are now since 2002 in Seville. This brother is my Spanish co-worker, Lucas Batalla. Batalla means battle. And we had another brother there, his name was Juan Soldado. Soldado means soldier. And somebody asked me if everybody was military in Spain because of these family names. But Lucas is a very good brother. He was a communist, and somebody gave him a New Testament, and he started reading it, and he ditched communism. And he was already out of Catholicism, into communism, and he left that, and they began meeting in his home. Well, he was baptized in fellowship in an assembly that later fell apart. It's a long story, but at any rate, then he started having meetings in his home, and that's how this assembly was eventually formed. When he was doing that in the South when I was up in the North doing pioneer work in this province. Well, years later, we met. In 1998, we met, actually, and he began to invite us down there every 2-3 months, come down, have a series of meetings from Friday to Sunday, and go back on Monday, and went through the book of Hebrews that way together. And then one morning when I was, after I had visited 7 or 8 times, that means 7 or 8 times spread out every 3 months, you know. One morning I was reading my devotional reading, and I came to the section, I'm reading in the book of Acts, and I came to the section where Paul had the vision or the dream of the Macedonian man saying, come over and help us. Well, I was just doing my reading through the book of Acts. When I went to see Brother Lucas that day, he said, you've come down here many times to visit us. He said, but we need somebody here all the time. He said, look, Carlos, that's what they call me. Carlos, he said, I'm the Macedonian man saying, come over and help us. I nearly fell on the floor. Mr. McDonald used to say to us, if you want to be sure about the Lord's will, ask him to make it so clear to you that you know you would be disobeying if you did anything else. Well, it became pretty clear to me that day what I needed to do. So when we moved down to help him, and they had already had this hall conditioned, he did most of the work on it himself, and so we began to work with him. But as Brother Andrew mentioned last night, sometimes when you get to an area and you begin to live with them, you find out that there are problems you didn't know about. And so come over and help us. But then when you begin to try to help, they're not so sure they want the help. What they want you to do is just to keep doing everything the way they did it that wasn't giving any result. And so we had an adjustment period. But through it all, we maintained our friendship and our fellowship, and the Lord has worked, and the assembly has slowly but surely, although it's a very difficult process, begun to grow. Then we had all the downtime from the pandemic. Before that, there were some people who left disenchanted to go off, and some who married and moved away to other places, and the assembly shrunk, and then the pandemic hit, and one brother died, and others, I don't know if this happened in the UK, let me just say, and you don't have to answer. Did anyone get the bad habit of just staying home and watching everything on Zoom in your pajamas with a cup of coffee because it was easier? Not take the trouble to go out to the meeting. Well, in the pandemic is one thing, but we're not in the pandemic anymore. And that was the trouble that we had in our assembly. It was hard to get people to come back. Nobody wanted to come to midweek prayer and Bible study anymore. Nobody wanted to have the gospel meeting anymore. They just wanted to meet on Sunday morning, which was all that we were allowed to do during the pandemic. So we had a very difficult time starting up again after the pandemic. It was harder. And add to that the problem that my dear companion, Brother Lucas, he's in his mid-80s now, and his wife's health is failing worse than him. His is beginning to fail, and his memory and her memory. And so it becomes even more difficult to do the things that we did before. And you know who some of these people are. Those of you who have had the seed sowers here already know what I'm going to say next because you recognize some of these people. Andrew was here last night, Andrew and Janelle, and Clifford, and dear Clifford came. They all came and helped. All of these are the ones from the UK seed sowers who came to help us in September 23. They were here. In what month of 23?
July.
And they came to us in September. I guarantee you it was hotter in September than it was here in July. They were a wonderful help, and it was a great encouragement to our assembly, because we said, if we're going to do this, and they're going to come and make this sacrifice, we have to start midweek prayer and Bible study again. We can't do a thing like this without prayer. And not just stay home and pray, but do like they did in the book of Acts, meet together and pray. This is what they were all doing. The united prayers of the assembly got Peter out of the prison instead of having his neck chopped off. And how many times did Paul say to people, helping me with your prayers? He wasn't talking about just their personal prayers. He was talking about the knowing that they, as an assembly, as a gathering of believers, were praying for him, the power of that. Well, so we began to pray and ask the Lord to bring them and to bless them and to help us to labor with them and to bless the seed sowers. And so this is what we did in that year. This is the Lord's Supper we had the last Sunday that they were there. We were just about to start then. You can see a few of them in the back there. This gives you a view of our little hall. It's very narrow and long. And this is the assembly today. So we had some people come from Venezuela who moved in to live in Spain because of the conditions there. And there's a couple that has just gotten saved that are with us now at the back. Joan, this fellow here, and his wife is right here. And this is their daughter, her daughter. This is a long story. They're Venezuelans. Neither one of them were saved. They were working in Chile, and they met each other together there. No, in Peru, sorry. Working in Peru and putting up solar panels, solar farms, and they began living together. And then they moved to Spain to work in the solar farms there. And then as a result of the seed sowers, they came to know about the assembly, and they started coming out. The first week they came to prayer and Bible study in the middle of the week. And we had been going through the Gospel of John, and guess what chapter we were on in John's Gospel the first week they came? Can anyone?
10.
No, it would have been nice. We were in John chapter 4, the woman at the well. Now, this is a couple that's living together, as we say, living in sin, because that's what it is, living in fornication. And when I saw them come in to the meeting, I thought, well, I wonder if I should change the study. And I said, well, the Lord knew. He's the one that worked all of this out. We're just going to go ahead. So he says, go and call your husband to the woman. And they're both sitting there listening. And she said, I don't have a husband. And the Lord said, of course, I'm not saying this in King James, but the Lord said, you said that right, sister. You don't have a husband. You've had five husbands, and the one you're living with now is not your husband. I was just explaining. I wasn't saying it like I am to you now. I was saying to them, you see, she had married and divorced, and now she's living with a man. And what did the Lord say? Living with a person doesn't make him your husband, doesn't make her your wife. He said, the one you're with now is not your husband. That's not a marriage, and it's not recognized in the sight of God. So one of the things that we do as Christians is we try to follow what the Lord says in his word. And we learn what he likes and what he wishes of us because we believe him. Faith is what? Unbreakable confidence in God and in his word. It's believing what he says is true. Not just believing that he exists, but believing what he says. Well, when the study was over that day, I said to my wife, we'll never see them again. They got saved. They came out to the meetings. They came to the gospel meetings, which we began to have again. They listened, and she came up and then him and said, I want you to know I trusted the Lord. I went home really disturbed after one of the gospel meetings. This was a couple of months later. And she got saved. So here they are. And I said, well, to my wife, I said, we'll see if they got saved because they're living together. They went off and got their birth certificates from Venezuela and went to the consulate to get them sealed and went to we call it the Registro Civil, which is where you have to go and perform a marriage before the government. And they did that and got their marriage legalized before the law. They have yet, we're in the process of, when they get baptized, then we're going to have them repeat their vows so the people in the assembly can hear it, and then we'll see about fellowship in the assembly. But this is what God is doing. It's very encouraging to us. We're looking forward to a baptism probably the end of February, maybe the beginning of March. We don't have the date worked out yet. This is a Venezuelan sister who is a medical doctor. This one right here in black and white. She's living there with us in Seville now. In fact, she's in our home until she can get her certification and get a medical practice established. So that's been an encouragement to us. And it was just as if by the Lord bringing the seed sowers and our responding to them, it was like the step that helped us to turn the corner and stop shrinking and stop dealing with apathy and get active in the Lord's work again. They're little steps, and we're still a very small assembly, but we've learned this lesson, that if you take a step of obedience to the Lord, He blesses it. So I'm very grateful for that. And those are lessons that apply to all of us, don't they? In whatever area of life, we take a step of obedience to the Lord and He responds to us. So we have another thing in the assembly. We have this book ministry. We began years ago to translate and publish a couple of books, and the response to them was so great. There was such a dearth of Christian literature in Spanish. You have everything in English, but it's very difficult to find good Christian books in Spanish. So we said, this should become a priority. Well, we had to have lived there a number of years and improved on Spanish to be able to do a work like to translate and to prepare books. One of the things that I was challenged by when we lived up in the north of Spain was the Spanish brother that I was discipling there, who ended up, he's one of the elders in that assembly there now. He said to me, I've seen missionaries come before to Spain, and when they get to where they can defend themselves in the language, they stop learning. He said, Spanish is a very rich language. He said, don't learn enough just to make yourself understood. Learn to speak it like we do. Learn to know how we think and how we feel. Let us be your friends. And live with us and identify with us, and you'll have a lot better result in your ministry if you're really communicating with the Spanish people this way. Well, this was true, and I took him at his challenge. And the Lord helped us. We had a 19-year-old Spanish young woman got saved, and her family literally threw her out on the street and threw a suitcase full of clothes out behind her, slammed the door, good riddance, never let her back in. She was 19, so she could have lived anywhere, but she was crying, called us on the phone crying and said, they've left me on the street. I said, stay right there, don't move. And I called my wife because it would have been very imprudent for me to go as a man and take a 19-year-old woman into the car and take her back to our apartment. I said, no, I drove. My wife got out and went and brought her. And she came and lived with us for 7 years. So in those 7 years, she never learned English. We decided she doesn't need to learn English, and we need to continue to improve in Spanish. So we'll have to speak Spanish in the home now. So there's no speak Spanish in the streets and then fall back on English in the home to make yourself understood. If you want to make yourself understood, you have to learn how to do it. Oh, how many headaches in Spanish to learn to say things. We couldn't even have a disagreement because we couldn't communicate well enough. Well, that's one way to get rid of them. If you're two of you are speaking different languages. But it was a wonderful blessing to us to be able to help Peely and also for her to help us to learn for those 7 years. A lot of things, Spanish attitudes, the way Spanish feel about things, sayings, proverbs, even jokes, the things that they laugh at, all of these things. We got a 7-year course from her in this that helped us. And I look back on all of this now and I say, well, in one way the Lord was preparing us for further ministry in Spain, but in another way He was preparing us to be able to do all of this. Because to be able to translate a book and to a Spanish reader to read it and to not say, well, I know what he means, but we wouldn't say it that way. That's what you're trying to eliminate in missionary work. I know what you mean, but we wouldn't say it that way. So we thank the Lord for all of that help for us. We have over 100 titles now. The ones I brought here with me on the table, I'll tell you, they're not going back with me to Spain. So if you want a book, the most of them is the one on Israel that we just recently did. But these books are staying here, and they're the only ones we have in English. All the rest of the books, we have 103 now. All the rest of the titles are in Spanish. And so it's a lot of the work that we're doing now. Before, I used to go up and down the mountains, visit in the villages and every little place in the Pyrenees Mountains and in the province and the cities. I don't have the energy to do so much that anymore, but I do have the energy to do this. And so thank the Lord for that opportunity. And these books, as you'll see later, going into all the Spanish-speaking countries. The Hispanic world is quite big. You know, we're talking about Central America, South America. There's even a country in Africa, that's Guiana Ecuatorial, that speaks Spanish. And then there's a large Hispanic population in the U.S. now, and even some in Canada. In fact, the States has declared Spanish officially the second language of the country, which is a step of progress for Spanish speakers. Right now, present, this is my dear wife here, my best friend and co-worker, and I already told you the other, still my girlfriend after all these years. She's my proofreader. She has an eagle eye. I write, and then I take it, once I finish writing, I print it out, and I take the manuscript and I go through it. This is what Mr. McDonald taught us. After you write it, don't just give it to somebody to print. This is your child. Now you have to kill it. That's what he said, which means take the red ballpoint pen and read it with the most critical eye possible and make it better, sacrifice, and read a whole sentence and say, why did I even put that there? Whoosh, out. And I should have said this and changed that, and this is, the word order is wrong here, and nobody's going to understand this expression. You have to be able to read it that as if you never read it before and not defend it because it's your baby. Well, then when I get done with that, I print it out again and I give it to her. Oh, and that's where the real work begins, because she has an eagle eye. Most of these books, since they're Christian books, they have a lot of Bible texts in them. Some of them are quoted, and some of them are just the references. She looks every one of them up. She sits there, and she's absolutely indefatigable with this. She reads every text, and you'd be amazed how many times she catches things. Instead of Matthew 28:11, it's Matthew 11:28. Or even a verse that I thought I copied and pasted from the Bible program, and she reads it, and she says, what version did you copy and paste this from? This isn't what it says. Red line. So it is a wonderful thing to have somebody like that to help us. And then we have another brother who's a Spanish brother who was a Spanish language teacher in institutes in Spain. He's retired now. So when we get done, we've done the worst we can, we send it to him. His name's Antonio. And he gives it one last look to see. I told him, be merciless, Antonio. If I said anything that you have to say, I know what he means, but I wouldn't say it that way, that doesn't pass. You have to tell me to change it. Don't be kind to me. Be mean to me. Help me to get it right. And so over the years, we've been able to do this. And right now, we're in the middle of this project. These are two of the four volumes of an expository commentary on the book of Romans. Just before I came to Northampton, I finished writing chapter 15. Printed it out, slaughtered it, printed it out again, gave it to my wife, and then I left. I said, I'm going away. So she's working on that one now. So there'll be four volumes in all, and this is why I haven't traveled anywhere for the last year and a half. This is the first time I've been anywhere, because I said, I'll never get this done. It's too important. It has to be right. It's something that's going to be for people who are coming along behind us, and they need to have it right. And it's better to do this than to take on a lot of visits and speaking ministry and other things, a lot of activities. It's better to do one thing and do it right and get that done. So I became a hermit for a year and a half. And Thank the Lord, well, next month, February, volume 3, which is on Israel, chapters 9, 10, 11 of Romans will come out. And then she's working on slaughtering the other parts that I gave her for the last volume. So you can pray for us about the book ministry. We really appreciate it. It takes up a lot of time now between that and the caring for the people in the assembly, Bible studies with different ones, and the new ones come with questions. One of them in particular, the wife, this couple that's newly married, she comes every week with a little notebook about this size, and she has questions in it. She's started to read through the whole Bible, and she says, okay, this week I was reading in Genesis, and it says this. Why did they say that? What does this mean? She's never read it before. So first she asks her husband. If he doesn't know, then she comes and asks me. He's always saying, ask Carlos, ask Carlos. So we get the questions, and the time working with them, studying with them, they come to our home. My wife is wonderful at hospitality, and so people come over, they have a meal with us, and then we have time, what we call in Spanish, the sobremesa, which is the time. Sobremesa means over the table. It's the table talk after the meal, when you're finished, and maybe you're having coffee, and you just sit around the table and talk, and everything comes up then, sooner or later. So that getting people's feet under your table is a part of the ministry, because that's one of the ways that you're reaching them on a personal level. Many things in the ministry cannot be done from the pulpit. They have to be done in person. Paul or John said in his, I have many things to say to you, but not with pen and ink. Face to face is the best way. So then I'll talk to you a little bit about, and we'll save some of this for the next session, but I'll talk to you a little bit in, yes, we have 15 minutes, good. Ministry in Spanish opens doors to the Hispanic world. And so I want to talk to you about some of the most recent travels, and then one of the places where I've been the most, it'll be in the next session about the country of Honduras. But this is Los Angeles. I put that up now so you'll remember to pray for the assembly in Los Angeles East. That's a Spanish-speaking assembly. And you know what's going on in Los Angeles right now. I'm sure you see it on the news. Well, I got in touch with them and I said, what's the condition of the hall and the brethren there? And he said, thank you for your prayers. Nobody in the assembly has lost any property. He said, first of all, none of us live up on the mountains with all the rich people. We're all down here. But in our neighborhood, nothing has happened. And the hall is still in one piece. So thank the Lord for that. But they still need a lot of prayers. And not only for them, but for their witness. Because this is an opportunity for them to reach people who have experienced loss and are having difficulties. So the Lord needs to help them to be aware of this opportunity. Well, they have a conference the week before Easter every year. And people come, Hispanic people come from as far away as Guatemala, Mexico, and Hispanic people that are in Canada or anywhere in the U.S. might show up at this conference. So when I went, this had been going on for years, and I found out this week they have like 400 people that are there meeting for this conference, Hispanic people. They come every year to Los Angeles. They don't fit in this room. You can figure that. This is about the size of your hall here. So I don't think you're going to get 400 people in here. Maybe if they're all standing up elbow to elbow. So they moved it outside and they put a covering over the parking area and made an outdoor area where they could meet. And so they have the platform at the other end here and the people seated all along here for the meetings. And went inside back into the hall for a baptism that week. But no chairs, because the chairs were all outside. So we all stood while the person gave their testimony, and there was a baptism. And then we all went back outside for the next meeting. And this is the meal, the Sunday meal, the last day that we were together, the farewell time. So it was a wonderful time to be with them and also to be able to reach people who have come from different areas of the country who are Hispanic, and they're also interested in literature, not these, because these are English, but all these other books, and asking, do you have anything on this subject? Do you have anything on this book? Wanting to know When are you going to get, we have 1 Thessalonians, when are you going to get 2 Thessalonians out? And asking you these kind of questions. Well, we just did get 2 Thessalonians out a month ago now. So pray for the assembly in Los Angeles. Also, from there to Mexico on the same trip, I have to take advantage of it. If you get across the ocean that way, you try to make the most out of it instead of just go and come back in a week and then you have to go and come back. It's too much in every way. It's too much. So go and then make several visits to different places while you're there. So this is right across the border from Arizona, from Yuma, Arizona. Yuma, Arizona is right on the border between Arizona and California. That's right, if you draw the line right down to where it hits Mexico, that spot where the California border and the Arizona border and Mexico meet, that's where this is. San Luis Rio Colorado. Very small assembly, just begun. There was an assembly there years ago, and I won't tell you the story of all of that, but a man came in like a wolf in sheep's clothing and ruined the whole assembly, caused problems with married women and unmarried women, and he had to flee from justice to leave there, but he completely destroyed the testimony. Thank the Lord for a brother whose name is John Dennison, who went into that area, him and Chad Kimber, that you'll see in another photo. Those two brethren went in there and started over from scratch. They sold the hall, the old hall, and they moved to another neighborhood in the city and began from scratch. And this is their beginning. This is Brother John over here on the end. John and his wife, Michelle, live in Phoenix, 3-hour drive. But they work like troopers. They're down there. They go down on Wednesday, and they stay until Sunday night for the meetings, and then they drive back to their home in Phoenix, and they get there after midnight. So they've been working tirelessly to visit in homes. I've been with him on occasion and seen how he worked. It wasn't me doing it. It was me watching what he did and working with the people, visiting them in their homes, giving testimony, answering questions, inviting people to meetings, all these kind of things. And so over the time, they began to meet again as a group, and just this past year in the spring, they broke bread for the first time again as an assembly, a new assembly there. So thank the Lord for that. Please pray for the assembly in right across the border in Mexico and for these people there. And there's a few more that have been added to the group since I was there with them for this photograph. Then back to Phoenix, where John and Michelle have their home. There's a Hispanic assembly there. It's called Phoenix West. In Los Angeles, it's Los Angeles East is the Spanish assembly. In Phoenix, it's Phoenix West. That's the Spanish assembly. And they have a conference the week after Easter. So the week before Easter, if you want to go, you go to Los Angeles. The week after Easter, you go to Phoenix for the conference there. And it's a wonderful thing to be with them. The same thing, you meet people mostly this time from Mexico, some from Los Angeles, mostly from Mexico, a few from Guatemala, and the ones who live there in the States. There's two brethren who are elders there. The names are Noé, and Aurelio. I had to think for a second. Aurelio, I don't know how you would say that in English. Just anyway, those are the two men who are elders there. Pray for them. And this is an opportunity for believers that are in little assemblies in different places to come together and to meet each other and to be encouraged and to form relationships to get good ministry. This is Chad Kimber. He's a tireless evangelist. He's very energetic. He's had troubles with cancer. He's had radiation therapy and all the rest. And just when you thought he was down and out, he got back up. The Lord raised him up and he's preaching again. And so he said, "Brother, as long as the Lord gives me strength, I'm going to keep going. I'm not going to rust out. I'm going to die in the saddle, I think, and die, like they say, die with my boots on." So he's a wonderful brother, and he's really great at personal work, too. Some people can preach in public, but they're not good at personal work. But he has the gift of being able to get right to the question with a person without being pushy. He just has a way about him of dealing with people in person, and he's been able to be used of the Lord to win many of them to the Lord. And this is their baptism they had at the time of that conference. So in the Phoenix and Los Angeles both had a baptism at the time of their yearly conference. So people are getting saved, and that's encouraging. Then we go to Mexico. Well, this area of Mexico, this statue here was an ex with a sword. Look at him. He's a Jose Maria Morelos was a Roman Catholic priest in the 1800s when Mexico revolted and got their independence against, revolted against Spain and got their independence. He was the leader. He was a Spanish priest, Catholic priest, born and lived all of his life in Mexico, and he identified with the Mexican people and led them against. So this is why this area, Iguala, the real name is Iguala of Independence. It's the whole name, because that's where they signed their Declaration of Independence from Spain. And the whole province, this whole region of Spain is called Guerrero. It means the war zone. That's where, that was the birthplace of all of the resistance originally. There's some very nice assemblies there in this area now. This one is in Iguala. This is the hall where they meet. And this is one of the brothers. This is a Venezuelan brother who's with them now. His name is Andrew. And we had an opportunity to go out to the plaza and preach in the open air and have a testimony that way. This is a brother, Duncan, and his wife, Anna, took the picture. She did a selfie, and she didn't get herself in there very well. So don't blame me for that. She took the picture. But at any rate, Duncan and Anna are missionaries in that area, and they are tireless workers. And these two people are, this is a man and a woman who were, his wife, who were Pentecostal pastors, both of them. And they met somewhere in public talking, and they came out to one of the meetings to see what it was like. And then they started coming to their house every week, and they're having studies with them now. So pray for them. Adam, or Adan is Adam in English, and Nadia, they really need the work of the Holy Spirit in them, but they're asking so many questions about why do you do things this way and why do we do them this way? And every time Duncan is smart, you see what he's got? You see what his answer book is on the table there? You see that? He's very wise about this. He says to them, well, let's see what the scriptures say, because that's the only thing that's of interest to us, not the tradition or your custom or our custom. What does the scripture say? And so he's studying with them about this, and this is on top of everything else he does. He moves between about four different assemblies, two of them of which he's planting and giving ministry in the others, so you could pray for them. When I go, it's a wonderful thing for me to be with them. I enjoy the fellowship with them, and also because I can speak Spanish, they don't have to translate me. It gives the missionary a rest, and he can really rest. He doesn't have to do anything, translate or any speaking work while I'm there. He gets a couple of days off. But it also allows me the opportunity to form bonds with them and to see ways in which we can help them, not just by literature, but sometimes there are questions. You know, what do you think we should do about this? Or what do you do? What do you do in Spain? Or what do you think about this situation? Or would you like to go with me to visit this person? I need someone to go with me. I'll say, I'm glad to go with you, but you take the lead, because this is your work here. You take the lead, and if something comes up, you want me to say something, you say to me, Carl, what do you think about this? But if you don't say that, I'm not talking. So we work together this way. This is their regional conference. Duncan and Anna were at this also. They're one of the five assemblies. It's a wonderful thing to be able to meet all of these people and their the work that each one of them is doing, get to know them. There are missionaries from different countries who are there working in Spain together. And this is the assembly in Mexico City. They call it the Neza Assembly because this is the name right here. Can any of you pronounce that name? Nezahualcoyotl. And so since it's hard to say, even for some Spanish speakers, it's hard for them to say, they just, everybody calls it the Neza Assembly. It's easier. So this is a typical way of meeting in Spain and in these countries, is not to have a separate hall on your own piece of land, but to have a building, you know, in a commercial area or residential area, a building next to all other kinds of buildings. Well, this building is theirs. They meet there. Here's the believers there. It's a very strong work. They are very evangelistic. It's a wonderful testimony that they have in this area. And these are the four men who are the elders there, all Mexican elders, which is a wonderful thing. This is one of the difficulties in missionary work, and you should pray for missionaries about this. Because when a missionary goes into an area to work, especially when he's doing pioneer work, and Brother Andy mentioned this, the typical thing is you're expected to take on responsibilities as an elder. Well, in these countries, it's even more so. If you're from a country like North America or the UK, they look up to you. Everybody in those countries, according to them, knows more, has done everything longer, is familiar with everything, and has more power to acquire things, economic power and everything else. So they just sort of look up to you in general. It's very difficult when you add that mix to the mix that some of these people are saved under your ministry. It's very difficult for the missionary to not hold the reins all of his life. Some of them think that as long as they're there, the assembly's going to do what they say. And I just don't see that in the New Testament pattern. They should be taught. What did Paul say when he left them before he went to back to Jerusalem the first time? And what did he say to the Ephesian elders when he said goodbye to them for the last time? To the ones in Acts chapter 14, he said, let me find it here. Here it is, verse 23. When they had ordained them elders in every church, not one, not a pastor over each church, elders, plural, in every church, singular. That's the New Testament pattern. That's not our assembly tradition. That's the New Testament pattern. And you need to be convinced of it from the Word of God. When they had ordained them elders, plural, in every church and had prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord on whom they believed. That's a commendation you don't hear of anymore today. The missionary commended the assembly, these new believers. They is Paul and Barnabas. They commended them to the Lord on whom they had believed. This is the Lord's assembly. You need to follow the Lord and do what he says. And they had laid plainly before them the teaching that they needed. You remember what he said in 2 Thessalonians when the question came up about the Antichrist and the day of the Lord? Paul wrote to them in 2 Thessalonians, he said, did I not tell you this when I was with you? Did I not teach this to you when I was with you? So the teaching, as he said to the Ephesian elders, was the whole counsel of God. He prepared the people to be able to carry on with the Word of God and follow the Lord without having to have a missionary at the head of everything. And he left. And they carried on because the Lord was with them. In Acts chapter 19, when he was saying his farewells to the Ephesian elders, Acts chapter 20, I'm getting my chapters confused here. He says in verse 32, Acts 20, 32, to the Ephesian elders, he has some pretty hard things to say to them before, some pretty shocking things that some of them were going to go astray and cause trouble. But then he addresses them all and he says, and now, brethren, I commend you to God. This is the apostolic commendation of the assembly. He commended them, not they commending him. I commend you to God. I'm not commending you to the denominational headquarters. There isn't one. People ask us that sometimes in Spain. They say, so what group do you belong to? I say, well, we don't belong to a group. We belong to the Lord Jesus Christ. Yeah, I know, but where's your headquarters? I say, well, in heaven. Well, but I mean down here on earth. I said, no, down here on earth. Well, but who governs all of these churches? I said, no, the Lord in heaven. They're just not used to anything like that. We try to tell them there's a pattern in the New Testament to follow if you take the time to read it. I commend you, he says, Paul to the elders. I commend you to God and to the word of his grace that is able, one, to build you up, and two, to give you an inheritance among all them which are sanctified. That's a commendation. And he left those assemblies. He didn't appoint elders so that they would be have to answer to the missionary. He appointed elders so that they would answer to the Lord and carry on in the work of the assembly there. And this is the way the apostles did it. And so we try to learn from this, and I'm always grateful when I see that an assembly has reached the point where they can say, this happened to Brother John Dennison in Phoenix. Noah and Aurelio said to him, thank you, brother, for all of your years of help with us. And really, we can carry on now, and you can be free to move along and go help the assembly down in Mexico. And he wrote to me immediately an email. He said, a wonderful thing happened today. He didn't say, oh, they don't want me here anymore. Look, I did all of this for them. I suffered all of this. I did all of it. And they don't have any appreciation. He wasn't like that at all. He said, it's a great thing. He said, they want to carry on looking to the Lord and following the Lord, and I'm free to go and work somewhere else. Isn't that great? That's the New Testament pattern. So this is what Paul did. And this is always a step of advancement, of growth and maturity in the work when this happens. So you pray for Jose Antonio, Marco Antonio, David, or David, and Henry, these four men in the work of the assembly there in Neza. And I have one more thing. Oh, I already took 4 minutes of Andy's time. I'll save this one for the next time then. Sorry, Andy. I'll show you that one, and you'll see something about the opposition in our next session. When I get to talking about the New Testament pattern, I get carried away. Sorry, brother.